potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Kong.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. And this week, we have finally made it to the week where I now have to go back to seeing movies. Because Star Trek comes out this week.
You're no longer able to blame, pass blame of, oh, I didn't see this movie, but I saw Star Trek a month before it opened.
I know. I got the critical pass for about a month, where it was like, I just don't have to see anything else because I was so far ahead. Now I'm not very far ahead, although I will say this, I've already seen Angels and Demons, so I got next week covered.
Yeah, as have I.
Awesome.
And then we're going to, then the next week is like Terminator and Night at the Museum and even Dance Flick. We're going to be able to get to see Dance Flick early too, which is kind of
cool. Oh, wow. I was not aware of this just yet.
Yes. Just can't.
Dance Flick. Anyways, while we ruminate on the idea of seeing Dance Flick early, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can go over to fatguysofthemovies.com and get us on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys of the Movies in the iTunes store. You can email us, fatguysoffilmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 614-388-8735. We didn't get any voicemails this week, except for this.
We got an email.
Oh, yeah, we did get an email.
Got an email from Jeff in California.
Our one listener, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Yes. Well, and he was congratulating me on coming back to ragging on you.
Yeah. Well, so, hey, good for you.
Yes.
That's all I have to say about that.
That's all I have to say about that. Oh, and it is and happy birthday to him because I think he shares a birthday with my son.
Oh, right. Well, hey, happy birthday to both of them, and go see Star Trek. I think he said in his email that he was going to go see Star Trek. Take a day off, go see Star Trek.
Hey, I think totally support that.
Perfectly acceptable reason to miss work. Yeah.
So this episode is Fat Guys in Space.
Are we in space? Yes. Fat Guys in Space.
We're in the magical studio in the sky, yeah. Yeah.
So we're currently floating on the USS Fetterprise.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. And we also will be going to the bathroom on the ceiling, boldly going where no man has gone before.
Oh, you.
Wah, wah. Funny.
Anyways, before we can talk about Star Trek...
I bring the show to a screeching halt with bad jokes.
Before we can talk about Star Trek, we need to talk about a movie that I didn't get a chance to see, but I know Kevin was all over.
Okay.
It was called... It wasn't.
Still is. They're changing the name to Star Trek to hopefully maybe get some good buzz.
Oh my God, how funny would that be? It's called Next Day Air, and it is about a delivery man who accidentally delivers a package of drugs to the wrong apartment, and then the people who live in the wrong apartment then try and sell them to make a profit, and some shenanigans happen.
What is this?
Apartment 303,
west across the hall.
I know this ain't what I think it is.
It is, yeah! Oh, am I dreaming?
I know who we can sell it to. Bingo. Boom. Now put 150 grand in your pocket today.
Man.
I need to count that money.
It's crazy.
Hello? You got it, right?
What? It ain't come here. The delivery dude, he stole it.
Yeah, lots of shenanigans. And here's the problem, is they just didn't have their shenanigans worked out.
Really?
I
hate movies that lack proper shenaniganery.
They have a lack of focus in their shenanigans.
A weak chicanery, if I may.
Well, and you heard the clip, but if you've seen the full trailer, it looks like it's this wacky kind of, screwball-ish kind of comedy with a little bit of an urban edge to it.
With a little bit of Tyler Perry action going on.
Well, I don't know if I'd say that, but
what?
But
there's not a dude in a dress.
No,
this movie's over for me.
Although, oh man, there is like the hottest woman ever in this movie. She is totally smoking hot. She's a
name, please. Cause while you're talking about it, I'll.
Gosh, yeah. No, she's
IMDb her.
She's new. She's a model, actually. She's I think Dominican, and she is just gorgeous.
Who
she's,
does she
like,
play
it's
in
Yasmin,
the movie?
Her name's Yasmin something.
Oh, okay. Yasmin Deliz.
Yeah, she is gorgeous. Right, totally hot. The only reason to see this movie because she's in like tight pants the whole time.
Oh, yeah, she's pretty cute.
She's gorgeous. But the thing is, there's a certain art to making a movie that is both funny and gritty and violent.
Right.
Quentin Tarantino is your perfect example of somebody who can do that.
Sometimes.
If you look at something like Pulp Fiction has just laugh-out-loud hilarious moments, but it's also very, hardcore in a lot of ways. This one tries to be hardcore, and then it tries to be goofy and funny. Like, it has this, you know, the whole thing where these guys are trying to pull off a heist, and they're not good at it, but then they have the drug dealers, and the drug dealers are, you know, real bad dudes and everything. So it's that gritty, heavy drug comedy, or a drug action movie. And then you have Donald Faison, who's from Scrubs.
Right.
Who plays the delivery man.
More appropriately, from Clueless, I believe.
Well, or from Felicity. And he plays the delivery man who's toked up on pot and everything. And so he's got the wacky sort of pot jokes going on. And it doesn't move between the two. It's like it kind of just comes crashing. It's real, like, bipolar. It's like at times it's fun, tries to be really funny, and times it tries to be really sort of gritty and violent. And it keeps shaking back and forth. And it's just not that good. It's just like they don't pick a path. They just try to do both, and they also have too many characters, really, because it's not really Donald Faison's movie, his character's movie, because he's only in it for like maybe about a third. It's not really Mos Def's movie, because he just kind of stumbles in and out of the scenes. It's not the drug dealers. It's not the guys who the best you could say it's the guys who find the drugs, but even then, there's not a whole lot of focus, and they go from being these wacky, goofy guys to then being like, man, I'll die for you. And that's, you know, it was terrible.
Fair enough. What's your official grade? And then I have something I want to talk about.
Sucks.
Sucks. All right. It sucks. And if everyone remembers correctly, back last week's show, we did not talk about Wolverine because we didn't. So I think we should talk about Wolverine today.
All right. Let's talk that. I talked about it a bit with Liam, in the show, but I want to hear what you think.
Well, no, here's what I think about Wolverine. I liked it enough. It was entertaining enough. I thought some of the CGI was just terrible. I mean, it's just awful.
There was some that really broke down. Like, there's a scene where he's extracting his claws at the sink. Well, or when he's just pulling out his claws at the sink.
Yeah.
And it didn't look right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that just looks wrong in the movie. And then but I thought it delivered some pretty cool action. And I thought it makes me excited that they might make a Gambit movie, because I thought Taylor Kitsch was great as Gambit, and his character was extremely exciting every time he was on screen. And Deadpool,
but they didn't do much with him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was very underused. Deadpool, very similarly, had a weird story arc that just kind of went off the deep end at the end. But I thought Ryan Reynolds was like the perfect Deadpool. Like, that first scene where it's him with the swords and he's deflecting bullets and stuff is just great. But I think it was just this peaks and valleys movie.
Yeah, the whole thing with what they did with Deadpool, I was never a big reader of the comics, but I know Deadpool has a huge following, and that's the one thing I'm like, you know what, if you're going to screw up a character, that was not the one to screw up.
Yeah.
So they probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, so I mean, but I think, you know what, though? Here's why it made a lot of money, and I know we're going to talk about this later. It was just a big slab of man meat. And 44% of its audience was female last weekend. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you this. That is one comic book movie that I predicted going into the weekend was going to connect perfectly with a female audience.
Oh, of course. So. Well, and you not only do you have Hugh Jackman running around without a shirt on, there's like a 5-minute segment where he's running around nude.
Yeah, totally. So. You know what? I think they succeeded, but then again, there's all kinds of ways you can nitpick that movie. I mean, it definitely had its problems.
Well, the reason I thought it worked is because, like the Incredible Hulk from last year, it every 20 minutes or so, it had a big fight scene.
Right, and that's ultimately what matters, that kind of a movie. So, yeah, I'm going to go back and say that it kind of rocked. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a movie that, you know. And we're back here on Fat Guys the Movies, and we have brought you to the big, I would say this is probably our biggest event movie of the year so far.
I
know Wolverine was a big deal in certain circles, but this is like the big one.
I think of all movies, I think this has the most buzz and the biggest excitement surrounding it of the summer. Now, of course, we're at the release. But I think, you know, like even Transformers 2, I think people are going to go, I mean, it's going to be big, it's going to be exciting, but that's the Transformers 2 and Harry Potter, six? Those are the ones that I think are going to garner the most attention, but I really honestly think that Star Trek is the one that's king of the buzz for this summer.
Yes. And spoiler alert, we're talking about Star Trek.
Oh my gosh, did I blow it?
We will, let's just roll right into it. J.J. Abrams reboots the famous sci-fi series with Kirk, Spock, and company right out of Starfleet facing a Romulan who plans to wipe out the Federation's worlds.
Enlist in Starfleet.
We received a distress call.
I've been waiting for this day my whole life. This day of reckoning.
We've got no captain and no first officer to replace him.
Yeah, we do.
They're locking torpedoes.
Emergency evasive!
Fire everything!
I hear you have a story about this.
Well, I do. I mean, our listeners are keen, and they probably remember me talking about the fact that I saw Star Trek at the unscheduled world premiere.
Yes.
So I kind of have a story going into my review. Because, you know, I saw it in that situation where we were at the Alamo Drafthouse, we thought we were going to see Wrath of Khan, Leonard Nimoy shows up, and they play the new movie, and it was awesome, and we sat, like, three seats away from Leonard Nimoy, and the crowd was nuts, and of course, that had an effect on my enjoyment.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
After that screening, was there anyone who was like, geez, I wish they would have shown Wrath of Khan? Was there anybody like that at all?
Everybody was... thought they were funny like that. They were like, oh man. They oddly enough, this week they went back, the Alamo Drafthouse did a special screening of Wrath of Khan for people that didn't see it then.
So, and then other people trying to get tickets and be like, they didn't show the new Star Trek, they just showed this old crappy movie.
I'm sure there were some people confused, but they actually showed Wrath of Khan this time.
But
that experience did kind of affect my enjoyment of the movie, I'm sure.
Sure.
Like, there's no way to walk out of that movie and be like, oh man, that sucked. On top of the fact that it was an awesome movie, it was just an awesome atmosphere. So yeah. I took time and I went inside at a regular screening this past weekend.
Still didn't spend money.
Hey now, that's not important. And it was the same exact thing. I mean, it was just as good the second time around. It was a fantastic, big, beautiful movie. And I thought, you know, it has the right amount of energy. It has the right amount of mainstream appeal. Like, I feel like they really bring these characters back in kind of a fresh way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there's one thing I want to point out, and I'll let you kind of give your opinion on the movie, it's the fantastic sound design. The sound design and the score is just amazing in this film. Mm-hmm. When the USS Enterprise, which is just humongous feeling in this movie, when it gears up and goes into warp, it hits you with such a boom that it knocks you on your ass. So
okay, well, were you standing?
Yeah, I was standing through the whole movie. I was standing and cheering through the whole movie the second time. People were looking at me like, what the heck is this guy doing?
He's like, woohoo! The green chick, the green chick's Rachel
Very
Nichols.
Hot.
That's not who was originally reported on a certain movie website that I heard.
On every movie website, everybody was saying that was Diora Baird, and it wasn't.
Because I saw the picture, I'm like, that doesn't look like her. And then when you see her in the movie, I was like, that looks like Rachel Nichols, and who I'm a big fan of, by the way.
Yeah, turns out that it's Rachel Nichols.
Well, but she worked on Alias with... there was a whole bunch of J.J. Abrams plants throughout. The only one who wasn't there was Greg Grunberg, which is usually in everything J.J.
Abrams. Greg Grunberg was in the movie.
Was he? Was he in... Was
he played the voice of the computer in... What was he? Hold on.
Wait.
I'll find it. You just keep talking. I'll find it.
That makes me kind of feel weird about that, because the voice of the computer was always Majel Barrett, who was...
No, and she was in it, too.
She was dead, isn't she?
She played the voice of the Enterprise computer.
Okay, well, but she always was the Enterprise computer, but it was always... Because she was the girlfriend... at the time, the girlfriend...
Majel Barrett Roddenberry.
Yeah.
Or whatever, Gene Roddenberry's wife.
Yeah, well, when she started the show, she wasn't his wife. But
right.
So does that mean Greg Grunberg is J.J. Abrams' sort of like squeeze?
Maybe.
It could be.
Greg Grunberg, I'm looking it up, but she was, Majel Roddenberry was the voice of the computer, the Enterprise computer.
Okay.
And
which she's always been.
Yeah. And then there is Greg Grunberg.
Well, but he was in it. And then Amanda Foreman, who was in both Alias and Felicity, she was one of the Starfleet officers. You had Rachel Nichols, who was in Alias. She was the green chick. So there was a lot of J.J. Abrams plants in there.
Right. Oh, I got it. Greg Grunberg, he plays the voice of Kirk's stepfather.
Oh, okay.
When he steals the car in the beginning, and you hear he gets a phone call, and it's his stepfather yelling at him. That's Greg Grunberg.
Okay. Wow, we just completely lost our entire audience except Greg Grunberg fans. It took so long.
Yeah, but you know what? That guy's on Twitter. He's really popular, so okay. I think we got a lot of fans.
Okay.
Anyways,
but here's the thing with the movie. I know that there's some rumbling out there from Trekkies and Trekkers, depending on who you call what, who are complaining about things that they've changed and they've updated, and those people just need to get a life. I mean, that's been said about Star Trek people for years, but
they
do need to get a life because it's a movie that's rebooting a franchise. It's got to connect with a new audience. Even in the film school reject circles, we found that while there are people that are really excited to see this movie, there's not a whole lot of people who have a long history of Trek in their movie and TV watching. So it is sort of it's an old show. I mean, the original show is
totally old.
It's more than 40 years old. So
God, my mom remembers watching this with her dad.
Yeah.
Like when she was really little. So we're not, I don't think it's like Star Wars. I think that there is people from my generation and your generation are not as invested in it. So I think it is probably the perfect franchise to be doing this with. And side note on the continuity, seeing it the second time made me realize this.
It is continuous.
It is very, very continuous. Like it fits perfectly. If you really pay attention, it actually fits perfectly with every other thing that's ever happened with the Star Trek
universe. Not to give any spoilers. We're not going to give any spoils, but it is not trampling on anything from the original series or anything like that. Because they explain it, and it's not.
Right. They
but it's not.
Why.
They don't come out right out and say, "Well, it's consistent because of this." But if you think about it, you're like, "Oh no, it does make sense. It all fits," and it's the most brilliant piece of writing I've seen in a long time to actually give themselves that out.
Yeah, I would agree. And it took me a second viewing to get that, to really get the fact that it was super continuous.
Yeah.
And how creative it was.
Yeah. Well,
it's very impressive. And I tell you what, the whole story, I mean, people don't like Kurtzman and Orci, the guys who wrote this, and because of Transformers, and you know, they think that they're kind of hacks. I've heard a lot of people call them hacks.
They also,
but they're not, man. They wrote a really, really smart script for Star Trek.
Well, and here's the thing: I think it's the perfect balance of paying homage to the fans. I mean, you got red shirt jokes, you've got the classic lines with Scotty and Bones, you've got all these throwbacks to the original series and the stuff that everyone knows about Star Trek, but it's also completely accessible. I mean, the most accessible of any of the Star Trek films to an audience who's never watched a frame of the TV shows or movies. You can come to it not even knowing anything about Star Trek, and you will get every minute of it, and it'll all make sense.
Yep. And it'll make you kind of want to go back to some other, like, to see those older characters. And I will tell you this, whether or not you've seen it or not, but anyone who is a fan of Star Trek, Carl Urban's performance as Leonard Bones McCoy, fantastic.
Well,
just hands down one of the best performances you could possibly have hoped for.
Well, let me say this, since you mentioned the cast, and we got only about a minute here, but anyone who's listened to the show long enough, I mean, like 2 years ago, I was expressing severe reservations when they started.
Oh, we both were.
I was like, Simon Pegg, what are you kidding? John Cho, these are these. I didn't buy it. And I said.
The guy from Harold and Kumar?
Yeah.
What?
I wasn't buying it. The only ones I liked was Zachary Quinto and Zoe
Saldana.
The only two that I thought would be good. But everyone else, I was like, until I see it. And I watch it, I'm like, it was a great cast. And it was a perfect mix of paying homage to the original actors and characters without going into caricature. Scotty, a little bit, goes into caricature. But boy, they
he
really
does,
kind
but
of
in a very awesome way.
Well, but that's all Scotty was anyways. If you really watch the shows, he was a caricature of himself by the time he got to the second, third season. You know, so I thought it was, I've said this in my review, I've said this on the radio, this is probably the best reboot I've ever seen since, you know, second and or right up against like Casino Royale or Battlestar Galactica.
I think it once again proves that J.J. Abrams is smarter than the rest of us. Well, so I'm giving it a totally rocks.
I say totally rocks as well, and live long and prosper.
And we're back on Fat Guys in the Movies, and now that we've given you our grades, I'd like to talk about Star Trek even more, because I'm totally geeking out right now.
Did you like my sound effect? That was my communicator sound effect.
Oh, I love, you know what, and the sound effect thing is just amazing. Like, the sound effects in this movie are phenomenal. Like, the ship, the other thing I love is that when you're in the Enterprise, there's these very cool bleeps and bloops that happen. That's the best way I can describe them.
Bleeps and bloops. Are those technical terms?
That's a technical movie reviewer term. And it makes the ship really feel alive. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes the Enterprise feel as if it is a character in the movie. The other thing I like is the way they handle the Enterprise as it's flying through space.
Yeah.
It's a huge ship. They treat it like a huge ship. It's not like whipping around, doing all kinds of crazy space stunts. I mean, there is a scene where it's flying through this field of debris, and it just runs into stuff because it's huge.
You're right.
So, I thought that just the overall scale of this movie, and I think that's one of the things that makes it very accessible, is it's a big movie. There are a lot of very cool space battles, but I think it is also very reverent to the source. Like, it's very reverent to what Star Trek is all about. Star Trek is ultimately about the relationships between the crew, and it's also about faith versus logic in many ways.
Here's something else I'll say about it, and this is a little more superficial. And no, it's not talking about Uhura being totally hot, although she is in her bra and panties, which is awesome.
Totally hot.
It's weird. It looks great, and it looks like an awesome sci-fi movie, but it doesn't look like a Star Trek film. And I'm going out on a limb saying mm-hmm. that, because if you look at some of the Star Trek films, especially if you look at the TV stuff, which back in the early 90s, The Next Generation looked awesome for TV, right. But you look at it now and it looks like it was made with models and toys.
Right.
And
it was.
Yeah, and then when they put that into the TV into the movies, it still looked a little bit toyish. And
right.
This looks way more real. It doesn't have that sort of chintzy Star Trek look to it.
Right.
So
I totally agree. Couldn't disagree with you if I wanted to. Right. So now I guess the big question is, how much is this movie going to make?
That is a big question. And I'm going to... here's the thing. I want to... There's a box office pundit I follow quite a bit, because I think he's usually pretty accurate. His name's Steve Mason. And
yeah.
He is predicting $65 million over a four-day or five-day. And I saw that, and I'm like, what is this guy smoking? You
right.
can't tell me that in the day and age of Wolverine making $85 million and Fast and Furious making $72 million, that mm-hmm. Star Trek is going to limp out of the gate at $65 million.
Now, there's just no way.
Well, and he makes a good point that he says that it's going to have probably some of the best legs of the summer, like Uhura in this movie. But...
Da-dum-dum.
So even though he's got that right, I think it's going to do Iron Man business in terms of just trucking along and just sticking with it.
Yeah.
But... His whole founding is he's like, the old Star Trek movies, the last one did so poorly that it kind of was uncool to like Star Trek. And I'm like, it was never cool to like Star Trek.
That was years ago.
It was in 2002,
it feels like it was way longer ago than 2002,
well,
officially.
The other thing is it's never been cool to like Star Trek. Star Trek has been the gold standard for uncoolness for years. Everyone always jokes about that. And what is this doing is this is making it cool. And I'll tell you, you took your mom to see it when she
right.
was down in Austin. Since I already saw it last week, they had a public screening this week, and I gave the pass to my wife who wanted to see it,
mm-hmm.
and it took my mom, and my mom's always been a Star Trek fan,
mm-hmm.
And they went and saw it. They got there an hour early, and they were an hour late for it to have sold out.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
The penetration into the marketplace is unreal with this movie, and here's the key. Like, my wife's a great example. She so wanted to see this movie. She was really excited to see this movie. She goes and sees, you know, only a handful of movies a year. She just waits till they come on DVD when I bring them home. This is one she specifically wanted to go see. She is not the typical Star Trek audience. She is not this geek who goes to conventions. She's just your average housewife teacher. She is a great indicator of the mass market potential of this movie.
Right. And I think here's another thing. There is a recognizable brand there, Star Trek.
Yeah.
Similar to what happened with The Dark Knight last year. There's a recognizable brand, Batman.
Yeah.
And then you add on top of that, you have the death of a major lead character, a lead actor. You have huge buzz just saying this movie's awesome. Like, just across the board, critical consensus, this is a great movie. Yeah. So you're taking, and it's not on the same level, but similar. You have Star Trek is a very recognizable brand.
Yeah.
Then you have critical consensus that this thing just rocks.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's box office gold right there. That is big summer money. And we're talking easily over $100 million this weekend.
Well, and here's...
there is no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, $65 million, it's going to be making $65 million within the first day and a half. It's just going to be raking those in. This is another thing that Steve Mason gets wrong. And I'm picking on him because he's the lowest number I've seen out there. He makes the point, he's like, well, it doesn't have any star power. And he's right, but just as Batman Begins really didn't have any star power,
I made the same point with, you think of Chris Pine, you think of Christian Bale wasn't a huge star before Batman.
Yeah, or Casino Royale. Nobody even knew who Daniel Craig was, but it has the star power of the name of the movie. You don't need stars for a movie or for a franchise like this that everybody knows. And here's the thing. I think the average movie-going audience has been dying to see a mainstream kick-ass Star Trek movie forever, and this one delivers. So I think you're right. I think this is going to... It's not going to be as big as Dark Knight because that was so out there. You don't get a movie like that, but every couple of years.
You know who's really the star? This kind of sparked the real star of this movie. There's really two people that I think will draw people to this movie.
Spock.
Not Spock. Zachary Quinto, because Heroes has a huge following.
Yeah.
Zachary Quinto is a name that people are starting to recognize. And I think J.J. Abrams is just a star. Like, he is... People... Lost has a huge following. People loved Alias. J.J. Abrams will draw people to this movie
because
is associated with this guy does really cool stuff.
Well, and he also has two hit sci-fi cult shows on the air right now on two separate networks that they are heavily advertising Star Trek on. You got Fringe and Lost. I mean, they were showing clips from Star Trek on Lost last week.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. I $65 million is just absurd to me.
Yeah,
not even close.
Look to see Star Trek be this year's Iron Man. It's going to go out of the gate with about $100 million, and it'll triple its box office by the end of its run. Like I said, it's not going to be Dark Knight big,
but it's going to be. I think it'll be a very big movie, and it's going. Yeah. It's really going to be kind of the movie. At the beginning.
Excuse you. Do you need to take a Tums or anything?
Maybe. So I think I'm going over $100 million. I mean, the rest of the box office doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I want to
next day air. That. I'm going to make a prediction. Star Trek will make more money on the Thursday night shows than next day air will make its entire weekend.
Sounds about right.
That's my prediction.
Nice.
And Wolverine. Yeah. It made a lot of money. That's the other thing. It made so much money. And you once made the point about Spider-Man 3. It made so much money because it was the first out of the gate. And I think that's true. But the box office has been off the charts this year with a couple kind of relatively rare exceptions. And it's just, I think the real push is going to happen. People think, oh, the big push was last week with Wolverine. People wanted to see it.
Nope,
people are now wanting to see more. It's going to be just as big, bigger, actually.
I agree. All right. Now, moving on with our fandom, I think. Let's move on to this week's Fat Guy 5. And we're going to do the five best Star Trek movies. Obviously, we're not going to include this new one, even though it might make the list.
Yeah.
It was the inspiration for the list, so we'll leave it out. So we'll start with number 5, which I think we split number 5.
Yeah, we each had to throw in our own thing for this.
Yeah, and mine is Star Trek the Motion Picture, the first movie, because who doesn't love the first Star Trek movie?
It was okay.
I dare you to find me someone.
I didn't love it. I thought it was cool.
You don't count.
But it lacked the humor and the irreverence and cuteness that the rest of the films had. And fair for enough. That reason, I'm dipping into the old TV show and saying The Trouble with Tribbles, one of the best episodes out there. Funny, hilarious. It has Klingons when they were just dirty humans. And they even did an episode of Deep Space Nine where they time travel back to that episode. And so it's such a classic episode that they even did an homage to it. So that's my number five.
Okay.
Do you want to do number four?
No, yours is, you get number four.
Okay, number four is number four, The Voyage Home. This is the Save the Whales episode with, it's the second one that Leonard Nimoy directed, and it really established the whole every other Star Trek movie was really good.
Yes.
Yes.
And number three is the sixth film, The Undiscovered Country, which was Nicholas Meyer coming back to direct after having directed Wrath of Khan. This is the one where the Klingons become part of the Federation are negotiating peace. I don't want to give anything away.
Well, and the thing is, part of the reason they made this was right at the height of The Next Generation on television, and everyone was like, wait a minute, how the heck did the Klingons become allies with the Federation when they used to be bitter enemies?
Exactly.
And this also, what's really funny is they had a special episode of The Next Generation where Leonard Nimoy played Spock initiating this truce. So it was, for me, I was in college at the time and I knew a lot of Star Trek geeks. So this was a big deal in the Star Trek lore of the year.
Word.
Number two, I'll do number two. This is the seventh film, which is actually the second Next Generation film. In my opinion, the best Next Generation film. It's First Contact. And it dealt with one of the best villains in Star Trek history. That'd be the Borg. I've always loved the Borg. The other thing, cute story. When I put on Facebook, told that in my status that I gave my wife tickets to see the screening of Star Trek. And a friend of ours like, oh, no way. I don't want to see a Star Trek movie at all. That would be the worst gift for my husband. And I said, well, her husband and he was in my wedding. We actually went and saw First Contact on my wedding day because we had an evening wedding. And women always have to take 8 hours to get ready. Guys, you shower, shave, and you put on your tux. So since we didn't have to be at the church until like 6, we went and saw Star Trek. We got pizza and went and saw Star Trek.
Nice. So that's good for you.
Yes.
And finally, number one is
Can I do it? Khan!
Wrath of Khan, as you got, that was actually a clip from the film. Wrath of Khan, easily the greatest Star Trek movie. Ricardo Montalban is still by far one of the greatest villains ever put on screen.
Yeah.
Because he is the perfect match for Captain Kirk.
Well, and this saved the franchise because the first one did well, but it was, people were like, well, it wasn't quite Star Trek. This one brought back the feel of the TV show.
Right. And I'm told if you see Wrath of Khan in certain theaters, it dissolves into the new movie. So fancy.
Well, you could try
like that. You can try. I say go see it. See what happens.
Yes.
So, and with that, we need to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap you up.
Khan!
And we're wrapping you up here. In fact, guys, the movies. We've come to the end of our show from space.
Khan!
Kevin continues to yell Khan, despite the fact that Khan isn't even in the new movie.
Neither are Klingons. Did you notice that? They really don't.
No Klingons, but there is that chick with the weird eyes. That's fun. So,
okay. Oh yeah,
and there are some weird creatures in the movie. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yep.
There's just kind of random, just existing in that world, yes. Which is very cool.
Yes.
So, but you know what? Enough Star Trek.
Let's move on from Star Trek.
Let's move on, and it is time once again for our world-famous DVD roundup, accompanied by our world-famous sound effects.
You know, I got a call from Ben Burt the other day. He wants to use me to do sound effects in his next movie.
Yeah, he's doing Indiana Jones 5. Yeah.
Not the Ben Burt that did Star Wars and WALL-E. It's Ben Burt. He lives around the corner from me.
Oh, right. Who's also doing Indiana Jones 5.
Yeah, in his backyard.
Nice.
Do you want me to start with the DVDs, or do you want to start?
Yeah, dude, do your thing.
Okay, let's
see what you got.
Well, because you're going to do the bigger one, but I'm picking up some smaller ones that actually I got sent. Give some love to these. The first one I want to highlight is Scooby-Doo Volume 2. Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? It's the original series, second volume, 4 episodes from the first season of that. So this is like sort of inaugural Scooby-Doo. And it's awesome. It's before Casey Kasem demanded that Shaggy become a vegetarian.
Oh, right.
Which was stupid. So that's good to check out. That's good for the kids. Also, something else I want to, a TV show I initially didn't like in its first season, I'm not a big fan of anyways, October Road, the second season's out on DVD, and it got canceled. And here's the reason why I think this is an important DVD, is it was one of those that was canceled before it wrapped up. So it kind of ended and had this sort of like all the characters were kind of going in different directions and sort of your season cliffhanger, and then they didn't renew it.
Oh, that sucks.
And there's the big thing about who is Hannah's son. Is that Eddie's kid or is it Nick's kid?
Don't give it away. I don't want to know.
No, this has been the question since season one. Well, what they did is they went back and they shot. Now, they shot it on video and it looked like they shot it in a day, but they shot this 10 or 15 minute wrap-up of the series, which I respect the heck out of that. I love the fact that they cared enough about it to just get everybody together for just this one last day and shoot a wrap-up, tell, you know, answer the secrets, say who ends up with whom, even though it's a bit goofy and it's, and you know, because it's not the best made little wrap-up, but I love the fact that they did that. And then the other DVDs I want to mention, Will and Grace has come out with two DVD sets. One is they're compilations and they go through the whole series and they're like 16 episodes over the 8 years that they were done. One of them's about love and marriage, so it's about like the relationships, which is okay if you like Will and Grace. But the cool one is The Best of Friends and Foes, because it's all the awesome guest starring roles. And I don't know if you ever watched Will and Grace.
Nope.
But they had, like, Matt Damon was in one and Kevin Bacon. There's one where Kevin Bacon, where Jack's stalking Kevin Bacon, and they got one where Michael Douglas plays a gay cop hitting on Will, and they've got Cher, where Jack is trying to explain to Cher how to do the good Cher impression because he thinks she's a drag queen. This is sort of like the best part. Will and Grace was at its best when it had the guest star, so this is something to pick up if you like that show.
Oh, I see.
Your turn.
All right, now moving on to the real stuff that you should go out and buy.
Yeah.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is out in 2-disc Criterion Blu-ray and 2-disc Criterion DVD. I will say this. I watched the special features on this other night.
Which is one giant documentary.
One giant documentary that is almost as long as the movie.
No, it's longer. It's
Oh, that's right.
It's like 20 minutes longer than the movie.
There's some really cool stuff in the special features. Unfortunately, you have to kind of wade through some crap to get there. But overall, it's a really cool DVD.
Well, you know,
it's a really good movie. So
what I thought was neat is when I was watching the Oscars this year, I was like, why is this picking up all these technical awards? Until you see this documentary, you don't even know the full extent of all the effects that were used.
Oh my God, it's ridiculous. But what I love about this, the behind the scenes of this movie, is that in various stages of the production, there was always one person who was like, but wait, how do we make it so that the same actor can play this character through different periods of his life as he ages backwards? And every time, either David Fincher or the people at Digital Domain, somebody was just like, "Ah, we'll figure it out."
Yeah,
like I just love that, just hubris.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. Wanted to highlight Grease and Ferris Bueller's Day Off on Blu-ray because these two movies have never looked this good. Yeah. Grease is beautiful on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And it's also a very awesome movie.
And Olivia Newton-John was totally hot at that age.
Olivia Newton-John, though. I believe you'll agree with this. We were discussing this here at Reject HQ.
Yeah.
That Olivia Newton-John was way hotter before she put on the leather.
Oh,
like
yeah.
When she's in this, you know, Sandy D schoolgirl. I mean,
girl
she's
next
totally
door.
Hot.
Oh, yeah.
She gets into the leather and she starts to show the fact that she was actually 30 when that movie came out.
That's true. And you know, you want to be the person to change her from the good girl to the bad girl. So that's why she's so attractive.
Right. Oh, man. She's so hot.
Yes.
Anyways. What's our stinker of the week?
Wendy and Lucy. And this one is mine that I got a lot of flack for hating back in the end of the year. But this was the most boring movie. And as Rob Hunter quoted to me on his DVD column, I've seen better film on week-old pudding in my refrigerator.
Right. Yet, he makes a good point. What would lead us to believe that there's actually week-old pudding in your fridge?
And I admit it. No one knows. I concede. Pudding does not last long in my house.
Fair enough. All right, time to wrap up our reviews. Kevin reviewed Next Day Air and
sucked.
And we both reviewed Star Trek, and I said it totally rocks.
Totally rocks. Won a rare moment of agreement with Neil Miller.
Yes. Next week, we'll be ostracized from the Catholic Church when we review Angels and Demons.
That's right. You come from Catholic upbringing.
I am. Ooh. So it was an interesting experience. Anyways, if you'd like to send us your thoughts on that, hit us over at fatguysmovies.com. Email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. Get us on iTunes in the iTunes Store, or call us 614-388-8735. Live long and prosper. Nice.